Drinking that water from my farm jugs, sweating in my t-shirt, squishing them bugs, eating minivan meals in the field, what a sight. Hey, that's how we do, farming like.
It's the first Saturday of the month, 8 o'clock hour, the outdoor living hour of Rosie on the house. So we're talking farm fresh commodities. We've got Julie Murphy, spokeswoman for the Arizona Farm Bureau, in studio with Steve Sossaman and his daughter Carolyn Sossaman, the fourth and fifth generation Sossaman farmers here in Arizona. Came over from Germany, then Texas, then Arizona,
and they
you're
stay.
On your 103rd year of farming.
Yes. And, you know, every comment to the ancient grains, you made me think of some other questions. One of the little tidbits that most people probably don't know, and I only learned because I'm kind of a nerd and a little bit geeky and I love facts, but the deep roots of ancient grains allow farmers to pull nutrients and long-forgotten flavors from the soil. And I hope I say this right. Like wine, we have our own terroir. Now I can't say it because I'm live on the radio, but... terroir. Mm-hmm. And
you nailed it in the break.
I nailed it in the break, but what's my problem? But it's perfect conditions, and that's one of the reasons why you guys are growing it so well, correct?
Yeah, that's one of the reasons I did my research also, there's not much out there. So I'm reading books from the 1800s to find some of this stuff here. But if we look at this grain, it grown in the Fertile Crescent, Middle East. Very deep soil, sandy, just like we have here. Those roots went down 10 feet into the soil. Unlike hybridized, which in America, we took our wheat, hybridized it because we shortened the stature of the grain so it wouldn't blow over in the wind. I mean, these ancient grains are very tall, but as we hybridized, we shortened them. We planted them in the prairies, which is the grasslands, and they didn't need to be very tall, so they shortened them. When you dwarf the top of the plant, you also dwarf the root system.
Sure.
And so we dwarf the root system. Doesn't need to be too deep in the Midwest. So maybe, you know, 3 to 5 feet. Well, we now today with these ancient varieties going into the soil 10 feet deep, you're bringing up elements and nutrients and minerals that chefs have never tasted before, and amazing flavors. And so, you know, we grow these grains. Hayden Flour Mills, they make all these flours, but they also make crackers. And I could set 4 different crackers out there that you would taste, and every one of them would be totally different. I mean, from nutty to earthy to sweet.
And they are so tasty.
And they are so tasty because those flavors are coming from deep in the soil. And like you said, terroir, I'm glad you speak French. but like grapes, you can grow a Cabernet grape anywhere in the world. But it's always going to have that different flavor from the ground and the soil and the climate it came from. And these grains, they grow in other places. I mean, you know, North Dakota, Wyoming, wherever, Texas, have a slightly different flavor, but they all have that deep-rooted where they come from to bring up those flavors. And you think, well, where do we get these seeds from? You know, if they're that old, well, we're kind of like seed detectives. You know, we go on the internet, we look around, we talk to other places that might have tried to grow it and didn't work out or whatever. And one of the ones we discovered about 3 years ago is called Rouge Bordeaux. Since we brought up the French angle here, why not? So Napoleon and his army, they're going into Russia. Oh, we're getting back to Russia. Dang it. Okay, anyway, this is history. They go into Russia. All the Muscovites leave, right? They leave them there with their horses and their soldiers, and they freeze to death. And Napoleon says, we're out of here. So they leave. They go back to France. And on the way, they grab some sacks of seed. And it is some wheat seed, and it was made for making bread there. And, well, they're like, okay, we're going to take this with us because they're not here, and we're going to pillage. They take it, and they take it to the Bordeaux region of France, which is a little bit warmer area, and they start growing this red wheat in Bordeaux, France, Rouge Bordeaux. And so we have now scaled up just this last year and this year as a hard red wheat for bread, amazing flavor, and that's the history of that one.
And you guys are also growing Jesus wheat.
Yes, from the Bible. We all know about that. So at that time, over 3,000 years ago, they're growing in Egypt, and that's our oldest one. Emmer, another name is Pharaoh, named after the pharaohs.
Interesting.
So That's another wheat that we grow. It has to be has a hull on it, which is unlike modern wheats, and we de-hull it in our system and then use that. Imparts a very interesting flavor to bread. So they'll do a mix of farro flour with more of a modern wheat flour to give a really nice nutty flavor to the bread.
And for listeners that are getting hungry, because you'll want to try some of this high flavor profile type of wheats, go to Hayden Mills.
Is it HaydenFlourMills.com.
HaydenFlourMills.com. And they can also access it.
They're in Sprouts, Whole Foods,
Fry's.
It's all over.
And is that what I'm looking for, is the Hayden Mills brand?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You'll see the Red Rose, and they stone mill all of their grain. That most of it is grown locally here on Queen Creek.
How does a rose become the symbol of a wheat company?
So back in the day, they had different types of flour sacks where they would store, all the flour in that they would mill, and it would have different flours on the sack because it was soft like a flour petal. They would mill the flour so finely and sift it to a grade that it was very soft and like a flour.
Aww.
So now we've kind of, it's an old design. They still use it, but they've kind of modernized it, and now it's their main logo.
Caroline, we talked on the break about the Good Food Award. Talk to us about that.
Yeah, so the Good Food Awards, they're an organization in San Francisco, but they kind of reach out nationally to small food makers, growers, every aspect of food. So they have, a grain category. They'll do beer, wine, chocolate, everything. But thousands of applicants will send in, blind samples of their product. And they go through all of those and they pick the winners. So I submitted our White Sonora wheat, and
excellent,
then our malted White Sonora wheat, and we won the award for 2022.
Awesome. Congratulations.
Thank you.
And that's very impressive considering how competitive. I've heard that it's quite competitive.
Yeah, but it's a great organization. They do good work, and it's really exciting to win again.
See, this is why you have ladies in your organization, and to have my daughter in charge of special projects like this is amazing. We went through a project a year ago or 2 years ago in which we grew out samples of ancient grains to get their baking properties, their milling properties, and their growing properties. We worked with North Dakota State University, U of A, even though I went to ASU. and so Caroline was in charge of that. We had collected all the data and got all the testing done, and she did a great job of doing that.
What exactly is the distinction between Sossaman Farms and Grain R&D? It's just another division of the business?
Right.
And what its role is, a lot of this, obviously, R&D?
Mm-hmm. Correct. So Sossaman Farms is kind of the head of everything. But Grain R&D, since we grew grain under Sossaman Farms for so long and sold it to, flour mills, we wanted to get into breweries and, other mills or malters. So we created Grain R&D so we could, we got specialized equipment, custom built. We have, color sorting, size sorting. So we can do a whole bunch of things that we couldn't do before and give a customer more specialized product for all the grain.
And so you really are growing and milling
mm-hmm.
for the customer. So I have a lot of confidence that there's going to be another 100 years of Sossaman Farms when I hear the innovation and the transitions you've made based on what's going on in society. So is Sossaman around for another 100 years?
It will be around for a long time in one form or another. And as we said, we have to innovate, we have to change. And as we move forward to in time, as the houses move in, we are maintaining our homestead, our headquarters there where our grain operation is, and probably going to expand that and maybe getting to the malting aspect of that, which our breweries in the Valley will be greatly excited about.
And again, for our listeners, and of course, some of our loyal listeners really enjoy and tune into the Farm Fresh Hour from 8 to 9, we've got a lot of our local breweries. So where would I go if I wanted to make sure that I was enjoying some of this heritage grain or ancient grain because they put it in the mix of their product.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so a lot of our most popular breweries would probably be Wren House in Phoenix and Prescott, and then Arizona Wilderness.
Yes.
And a new one, Roses by the Stairs, is going to open in Phoenix soon. And then the Shop Brewing, Old Ellsworth and Queen Creek.
We love Old Ellsworth. Yes. They helped us with our centennial beer. So
mm-hmm. Yes.
They are good people. In fact, a lot of these local breweries, I was, again, some of those crazy statistics that I pull up. Most Americans are within 10 miles of a local brewery.
Mm-hmm.
Little fact there. And when we know that there are breweries committed to using some of the local product that Sossaman Farms, examples like Sossaman Farms grow, it's pretty exciting. The other thing, though, that this causes me to think is you've always innovated as things have changed. What do you think's been that trigger for the family to be that quick? Do you look around the corner before everybody else is, or what do you think is a Sossaman gift for doing that?
Well, I don't know if there's a gift there, but I think I take my cues from my grandparents, my grandfather, my grandmother, that they just didn't sit still. They were always, you know, we had two other farms. We had one in New Mexico, one in Colorado. In New Mexico, we grew castor beans for castor oil. World War II used a lot of oil still because they still were using leather back then. And then also in Colorado, we had our farm up there to grow potato seeds. And you always grow your seeds elsewhere because of the diseases, and we'd bring those down to Arizona. But also innovated at that time, say, okay, we're going to get rid of those farms, focus on one area. It's the only way to do it. And then, you know, and then be involved in public service, which always opens you up to opportunities and to other people and ideas. I've always been involved in national organizations from, you know, Cotton Incorporated, U.S. Wheat Associates, travel to other countries, see what they're doing, travel to other parts of the United States to see what other farmers are doing. And can I take those ideas and bring them home? That's just kind of something that it's exciting to do. And like I said before, always say yes. And then I don't even know what the question is, but I said yes. So I want to find out stuff. And I'm always inquisitive. And you know what? You only learn from your failures. You know, success, you just keep on going. But your failures, they teach you. And so farming, it's not making a living. It's making a life. And that's how I feel about that.
And well said. The other thing that I wanted to ask you guys is a generational farm. It's not just Caroline that's kind of involved in the business. Your wife, Chris, has a tea business. So what's the other spouse and the other siblings doing?
Well, my wife, my beautiful wife, started a tea business several years ago because she just couldn't find any good tea around.
And so I love her tea, by the way.
Yeah, Tea Royalty, whole leaf tea, flavored tea. She does all of her purveying from around the world and then does her own custom blends.
We don't grow tea in Arizona.
Or in America.
She is localizing it by
mixing
and blending.
Yeah, and so that. I hired my son-in-law several years ago to run Grain R&D.
And doesn't he come from a farm family too?
He is. He's from the west side. He's a Tomachev. And you know those Russians out there?
They know how to work.
They know how to work. And so, you know, you got the Russians from the west side and the Germans from the east side. So, you know, we're a blended family. But we get along.